It's been really challenging to get on satsang, as you know. And I thank you, Shakti. Thank you. We couldn't hear you very well, but the effort is not lost. Your heart is resounding and heard. So I would like for the people to go ahead and raise their hands because I didn't bring anything particularly to satsang. And I would like to address whatever you have in your heart that you would like to have addressed. Mm-hmm. Lani, that would be Ramananda. Mm-hmm. Hey, there. Yes, let's put Ramananda on, please. There you go.
Hello, Shanti Mai.
Hello, Ramananda. How are you?
I am fine. I really don't have any profound question for you, but I am just telling you I'm very grateful for my time with you, and I'm looking forward to my trip to visit you here in a couple months away.
Great. Even the simplest point, we don't always have questions.
Exactly.
Sometimes we have round discussions over a certain view that somebody has. Sometimes profound questions, sometimes simple questions become extremely profound. So anyhow, I will be happy to see you as well. Namaste.
Namaste.
Anyone else want to put their hand up now? If there isn't anyone else, no, Sahara, hold on. Did you have your hand up, Sahara?
I can put my hand up, Shanti Mai.
Nice to have satsang. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you could share. When I was just on the phone, as you know, with my mom, and she's dealing with a great deal of recurrent grief in this moment. And I was wondering if there's anything that you can share to somebody moving through. There are certain points in life when there's an inconsolably difficult moment, and there's deep down one is aware that that will dissipate, and one will return to a place of not being so shaken. But is there? What would you share with somebody who is deep within that moment?
They just must go through it. That's all. I can't imagine how to shut it off. I don't think that's possible, specifically for people who grieve a great deal over a long period of time. And we have to, my sense is always to let you know that we grieve for ourselves. And I feel that once that's understood, that our grief is not for the one who has passed, but for the life that has passed, or the friendship that has passed, or the hole in the life that seems to be there since someone did pass. I feel it's very important to know that grief is for oneself. It's really and truly a pain in the heart. And it is also facing one's own mortality. This is a very important point, no matter what the age is, no matter what the age is, everybody who is grieving somebody's passing and really grieving that, really sad about that, in that grief is a grief for one's own passing as well. It's just like that. And I feel that they have to come through it. There's no button that you push or nothing that you can say is, in my view, at this moment, could change that would console a grieving heart. Now, for the yogi, there is no real grief. There may be a missing. There may be a feeling of lack. There may be, you know, because somebody's body is gone forever. But we know in our hearts, we're very aware that we're not the body. We're not our thoughts. We're not even the passing of this experience called life on earth. And that the, what is called the soul or the fundamental essence of the person, which is there always, even in life from birth to death, has never been born and will never die. I just wrote this to one of our Sangha who is Israeli. And she said, thank God that I turned towards God and have faith in God. And she thanked me for that. But actually, she can thank me for as a reminder, but it's her choice whether she comes into her heart and goes deeper into herself than what could be called superficial in life or on the thin line of superficiality. It may not be so superficial. Maybe the war in Israel right now, which is very, very serious. Huh? But even in the midst of that, she's not home and she can't go home. She's looking for the day that she can go home. She's looking for that. She has put her faith in God in knowing that things are as they are. And I feel that that's one of the ways to calm grief is to understand that things are the way they are and they're not going to be another way. They're just not. You're never going to be able to bring that person back. And another point is that this body and this thoughts and this personality and this life is very natural to have its ending. Everything is impermanent here. And I feel that that's one of the points that people who grieve deeply don't really understand the impermanence, even when they're facing their own mortality. They still don't have that sense. They have the sense that, why did this happen? Why did it happen to me? Why did it happen to this person? And even I have heard at the ages of 85 and 90, why, you know? And because it's natural. And when people die, it makes room for life and for their next life as well. So I don't think there's anything to do or say that can heal. I don't like the word healing so much, but we'll use it here. Heal the heart from the grief that they feel. They really have to go through it, and they're never going to be the same. You said that, and when they return to their original kind of life, but one who grieves deeply will always be different, always. Maybe not always grieve, but always be different from the time before the passing occurred, that's for sure. So you love those who are grieving, and you can tell them all kinds of things that are true and all kinds of important messages and what would give the heart rest and peace. But usually it doesn't take. Not unless they've had a background of emerging wisdom in a yogic manner, in a Christian manner, in all kinds of manners that give a person an opportunity to accept the impermanence of life. It is impermanent, and everyone's going to depart. And in a way, that's a good news. In a way, it's really hard. Just depends on how you see it. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sahara.
Welcome. I was remembering, Shanti Mai, a couple of stories that you told. One of them was about the Sari camp when you were out in the desert in Australia. and you were moving out on the land, and then your journey was altered because the ladies that you were traveling with were moved into the Sari camp, is what they called it. A young fella had passed on from that camp, and there was a specified time of intense sorrow.
Intense. The wailing of the women was, I mean, it flew out into the stars. It was like fireworks, and it was like something I've never heard before in my life. And the men came in on a beat, and that was their wailing. And it went on, and they all disappeared. They all left for the Sari camp so that they could go and grieve their loved one. You know, and then so you have that. And then you have Krishna speaking in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield. Arjuna, there is never a time when these warriors were not, and there is never going to be a time when these warriors are not. You have always been and shall always be, and it's a real different view. And both are valid. This is where, excuse me, this is where Niels Borg's, is it Niels Borg? It is Niels Borg. Is it Jules Borg or Niels Borg?
It's Niels Borg, Shanti Mai.
Anyhow, this is where his statement comes in, very, very focused. What is truths, what is opposite from a true statement is a false statement. What is opposite from a profound truth may well be another profound truth. So for the Aboriginal, this is what they do. And I understood it, that it's worn down to some time, because it used to be 6 months that they would stay in Sari camp. And Arjuna fight, because there is never a time when these warriors were not, and there will never be a time when these warriors are not. So both are true. Both are accurate. Both are specific and important to the people who have the experience of them. I'm of the yogic school, and I'm empathetic and compassionate and understanding to the degree that I can of the Aboriginal school. I agree with both.
Oh, and one of the reasons I brought forward that...
It doesn't, but I agree with both.
One of the reasons I brought forward the Sari camp, and the same is true with the practice of sitting Shiva within the Jewish tradition, is that there is a time of focused grieving, and then there is a process by which the Sari camp or the Shiva is ended. There's a certain period of time when it is, and it gives the opportunity to, and we don't have that in our common Western culture. We have the beginning of grief, but we don't have the way to, like, do we not have the ceremony or the...
I don't know what the ceremony is, Sahara, but they actually have exhausted their grief. And the Aboriginal is not permitted to speak that person's name ever again. That's part of it. You can't even in the mob, they don't like to be called a tribe, from what I understand. Please excuse me. I'm just repeating what I learned from the Aboriginal people, that even when there is someone who has the same name in the mob, that person has to change their name. And they change their name to a name that says you can't have this name anymore, from according to Noel Nana. And even in movies in Australia, they will say this person is being spoken of or representative, or there's photographs. So those who don't want, you know, that this is not, I don't know how they word it, but that this is not their tradition to see or remember or speak their name, be aware that this movie contains their name. So in that way, they're left to go their journey. And my sense is that, you have to be very careful to release the energy of the past person. This is my view, that there's some energy that you can hold to yourself. I'll say it that way. I think it's detrimental. Until it's done, then it's done. Then it's done.
And when you say detrimental, Shantimai, are you speaking of... do you remember when Stephanie said that she was getting a message from her uncle that because nobody had cried for him when he passed, he was a difficult person, he wasn't close to anybody, that no, since nobody had cried for him, that he hadn't been able to move along?
I do.
I would say
that that's true on the other end as well.
Right. To continue crying might be a way to create a lingering energy so that it would be...
That's a very beautiful way to say it, a lingering energy. And whether you're creating that or whether that's true is up for conversation. But nevertheless, you are creating a link and a lingering energy. And I feel that it's detrimental for the griever. And I feel it's detrimental for those who are grieved for. And it's really interesting what you say about Stephanie's uncle, who was not grieved for, according to the shaman, according to the elder, who said that they could not, it was an elder in a dream, I believe, who said they could not do anything. There was this link that was holding this person's energy field to the earth and not moving on. Mm-hmm. So I feel it's true in the other way too. If somebody's grieving and grieving and grieving and grieving, and to honor a life, you live well. You just live well, huh? And you remember all of the good times that you had and let it move from there rather than, but people are facing their own mortality in it, and they may not be admitting that, but it's true.
Oh, my Aunt Colleen also lost her son last year. So we're planning in India this year to have a Ganga offering for a portion of his ashes and my father's.
That's really, but there's a stability in that. There's a love in it that is not a clinging what's the word? Well, just say it's self-grieving, because that's what it is. Holding on. This is very, very hard. But I think they have to go through it until they're done.
Oh. And with that ceremony, there's a quite literal releasing.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people leaving the planet right now. We know. I believe there must be at least 10 people that we know that's passed in the last month. At least.
Many, Shantimai.
One year, I knew 30 people who passed. Mm-hmm. But people are passing all the time. It's also a very personal experience, because we're not grieving everyone who's passing every minute of every day. We're grieving those who are personal to us. Huh? So a lot of people are passing and we're not grieving them. Mm-hmm. It's something to consider.
Would something like an Anushtan this year when we were in India?
It would be very good to have an Anushtan. It's a big fire ceremony in honor of whatever you want it to be in honor of. That would be very good. Mm-hmm.
That just arrived in me as a possibility, and to welcome whomever has a soul that they'd like to bring along with them.
Well, we'll talk about that there.
I think that would be
great. Let's move on and see if there's anything else to speak about in satsang, Sahara. I appreciate what you're saying, too, because there's an awful lot of people who are passing right now, a lot of people passing. So I'm glad you brought it up, and I know your own challenge in it.
Thank you, Shanti Mai. Namaste.
So, no other hands. Okay, well, there we are. Nora Arjuna, please. Let's not.
Nora Arjuna, we can hear you, but we can't see you.
Oh, sorry. I'm on my phone, so.
Until you put your camera on, we can't spotlight you. Just so you know.
I'm on my phone, and I have no. Okay. I have no.
Okay, clear, but we can hear you.
I shan't be my.
Namaste, Arjuna. Please tell me.
I was wondering, can we have a conversation about dying and that itself?
In India, we can talk about that. I think it would be a really good idea to have that in India on the Ganges. And everyone knows someone who has passed, because your father passed, other fathers are passing, Sahara's father passed, Kubira passed. So many people are passing right now, and there's more. I'm just not going to go through the names. And we could have a good celebration, a loving, genuine celebration of their lives on the Ganges. I think that's a very good idea.
Well, I'm probably not going to be in India, though, unless something.
Well, happens. I don't know what to do about that. I think that so. I don't know what to do. Maybe in Teradasacha at some time, too, we could do that.
Because I was wondering, right now, a friend of my mother is in the process of leaving her body.
So many people.
And when can people let go? When is the time? What is the point where we can really cross over? And why is it in a way easy for some people and others? They just hold on, or are they just not able to leave their body?
Because they're frightened oftentimes. They're attached to the earth experience and people in the experience. And detached in a yogic term does not mean cold and aloof and distant and untouchable. Really, it means the deepest loving possibility that there is, and an absolute freedom that all things are going on as they do. That's detachment. And in my view, detachment is extremely loving. And yet there is a detachment on earth that is clinging. And I don't have an answer as to why, because I don't know the person. If I knew the person, I might be able to say my view as to why. But there may be billions of whys, as though there are billions of people. So, yeah.
Isn't there also like a cosmic moment that defines the point?
Yeah, it's called the last breath. And my view is God, who I always refer to, the unknowable, inexhaustible, undoubtable, unnameable essence is, to me, is God. And that's everything that exists always and forever without a gap, cannot be shattered. My view is that God owns the last breath always. The person belongs to God, the last breath belongs to God. Then you have the spectrum between what Sahara was speaking about and what you're speaking about, between the yogi who may grieve, but understands something about not grieving. And then you may have the griever of the Aboriginals who understand something very powerful about what it means to grieve and release. Then you have that spectrum in between. I don't think that we can pinpoint anybody's reasons or whys or hows. It's as personal as, it's as intimate as birth, the passing. Remember that the Upanishad, the Brahman Upanishad, not Brahma, Brahman Upanishad. Brahman is, excuse me, prior to Brahma or prior to anything. The Brahman Upanishad says there are three births: conception, first breath, last breath. I agree. Not that the Upanishad needs me to agree, but it resonates deeply with my soul that that is extremely accurate.
So are we saying it's all up to God? Or?
Well, it always is anyhow, yes. We think we're in control. It's just so silly. I don't know who we are, but human beings have this idea. Maybe I'm off on that. I don't know. I don't know all the human beings in the universe, but seem to have the idea that they are in control of everything. And some yes and some no. Mm-hmm. You definitely are in control of your responses a good deal of the time. Not every time. Mm-hmm. Be ready. Live your life really well so that when that last breath comes, you can say, hallelujah, I've had a really, really good life, challenging and wonderful. I loved.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I got to go because there's two other people here. You write to me if you have anything further to say.
Thank you, Shanti Mai.
Thank you too, Nora. Greetings, Lee. Namaste.
Namaste, Shanti Mai. I haven't seen you for a long time. I think the last time was when you were at Wendy's on Harford Road in Baltimore for a Sangha meeting there. I don't know how long ago that's been, but it's
been at least 5 years.
And I haven't been doing the Zoom, my fault. I just, and I don't want to bring everybody down in terms of, but one thing that's been concerning me, I guess, since I think Putin's move into Ukraine and now the Hamas and the Gaza Strip, is that I just find this spiritual despair that seems to be hanging over me as like a cloud that I can't sort of get away from. And I was just wondering if, other than, you know, I guess just trying to do something in your life to accentuate joy is.
Well, that would be a very good point, wouldn't it? I think that would be wonderful because in the world of the bodhisattvas, you know the bodhisattvas?
Sure, a little bit. But I'm mainly Buddhist, but I know a little bit.
Right. Well, the bodhisattvas are those who are usually disembodied, not always, that are living for the awakening of the planet. Hmm? As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, I too remain to relieve the suffering of this world. That's a bodhisattva vow. And to be a bodhisattva, not that you need to be a bodhisattva, but I got a point here. I have a point. To be a bodhisattva is tremendously, in the Buddhist terms, is tremendously arduous. And the first requirement of the bodhisattva is to be joyous. And it, you know, I was talking with somebody, who was it? I don't remember. About the situation in the world. But this situation has to go on. Because somehow people, human beings have to just knock their head into the cement before they wake up. And if you want the world to change, you have, as Mahatma Gandhi said, and I'm sure that the Upanishads say, and I'm sure that the Christians say, and I'm sure that all of those who are genuinely wise in those systems understand that if you want the world to change, you have to be the change. And that's a fact. That's a fact. Because the only, it was Guy Weiss I was speaking to. The only way the world will change is when human beings change their consciousness. So be a part of the change. Rather than, I understand to the degree that I can understand you, but I do understand the lamenting and the sorrow of what people have to go through. It's part of the awakening. The political structure and diminishing of the political structure is also part of the awakening. I don't know if I will be alive to see even the slightest result of the awakening, but it is happening. It is happening. We're not on a timeline. This is a very deep shift in consciousness on the planet Earth. Wars are not going to be anymore. People are going to be so sick of wars and so awakened by the horror of the wars. Gosh, it's amazing what humans have to go through to come to their heart, to stop right fighting, to stop thinking that they know the best for what everybody else ought to be doing. It's amazing to me that human beings cannot leave each other alone and be happy in each other's company. It's coming. It's coming. We know it's coming. We all know it's coming. We know it's coming. The Mayans know it's coming. The Hindus know it's coming. The Christians know it's coming. The people know it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming. But it's a hard, hard road to get there because of the way human beings have formed their way of seeing. Be happy. Your worry and your lamenting doesn't do a darn thing for the people who are suffering. But you might remind people of what joy looks like. Because if we don't remind people what joy looks like, it may be lost on the planet, but I'm sure it won't be. But if you want things to be different on Earth, you have to be the difference. And then you'll be the difference. We're walking into a different time. We're walking into a different I don't know how to say it. I don't like the word energy. I like it sometimes. Realm or frequency. But it's true that we're moving into a much more congenial and loving space. And it's going to take time because some people just don't want that to happen on Earth. But it's going to, and it is happening. And my dear disciple who lives in Israel, how she, while she's out of the country, not knowing when she's going to get back in, looking for the day she can come back in soon, said, I am so grateful to turn to God and to have faith, my faith there, and leave everything in the hands of the divine and move in that way. Because, I mean, she's in the middle of the war. So who knows what you learn in those horrible spaces. I remember, I tell you one more thing, Lee, before I go. I remember a story that was told to me from Germany about a woman told the story about, I think it was in Dresden when bombs were just flying, and her mother took her by the hand and took her downstairs in the basement, and she held her in peace. And she said, I've never been afraid in my life because my mother held me in peace. And my mother was not a fearful. So she transferred to me her peace. And I would say it's really important, because if we all get in, and I understand getting in, I understand it, I do. It's not difficult to get into the place where we are so involved, but we're not doing anything to make the change. You know, our hearts are affected, our compassion's affected, our empathy's affected, our ideas are affected, we're hurt and we're suffering, and that's understandable. And yet, we have to be the change. And that doesn't mean not to have compassion, but it does mean to learn to love everyone, including Putin and Ukraine and Israel, and to love God's creation as perfect. And it is perfect because it is as it is. And that makes it perfect, because it is as it is, not because we think that we know what perfection is. But we have to go through this, to wake up. It's a very strange planet. Here we live in a paradise, and few see it, but more and more are seeing every day. Bring joy to someone. You're a beautiful man. Sometimes it's just a smile that will create service to someone's heart, not anything more, or feed the poor, or find a way to affect through your heart, because obviously your heart is very good, very clear.
Thank you, Shanti Mai.
You're welcome. Namaste.
Namaste.
I'll see you soon if you come to satsang.
Yeah. Will do. Yeah.
Santosh.
Santosh.
Well, Shantimai.
I got an echo on that one. I don't know why.
It might be my configuration. We've got it thrown to the TV, so we've got a bigger screen. So apologies for that.
Okay.
Actually, not dissimilar to what Lee was talking about, what came up for me early in satsang was about division. And what I'm actually immersed in, a lot of Australia, or the whole of Australia is immersed in it right now, with a question that they're asking of the people, and it basically has yes or no as an option. And so, and it's around how to work with, how the government works with Aboriginal, what they call the voice. So moving forward in a way that reflects what the Indigenous people of this land would like. And then there's huge arguments, both sides, about what that means and what the government mistrusts, all of that stuff. But basically it comes down to a yes, no, and we're thrown into this position of having to choose sides. And it is a legislated, in this case, it's legislated to, you have to vote on it. You can write yes, no, you can write maybe, whatever you like, but it, either way, there's a division that's been thrown upon us. And when I look around and I remember when I look at the you know, the states, division, when I look at Ukraine, Russia, division, when I look at now what's happening, Israel, Palestine, division, liberals, nationals, Democrats, you know.
Santosh, where are you?
Santosh, you.
Where are you?
Where are you?
Sort of walking a very fine up line.
Why is it
I don't
fine?
Want to go either way.
Why is it fine?
It's not a fine line. It's a very broad.
It's a very broad.
You know, it's when you're when you're
when you're when you're like.
It's very broad because
it's
you're
very
not
very broad because you're not
part of a division.
A division.
There's no such division.
There's no such.
It's all the Maya of
it's
division.
All the Maya of division.
The illusion of division.
The illusion of division.
I was in the airplane.
I was in the airplane.
Yesterday, day before.
Yesterday, day before.
Just a sec. I'm going to just try and turn the other thing off. Okay. Here we go. Okay.
And I was looking down on the planet.
Yep.
You get it? And I was looking
yeah.
down on the planet.
Yeah.
And I saw these extremely little tiny cars.
Yeah.
On this extremely tiny little road with this even much smaller being inside of it.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's where I like and feel that it's important to live with your feet on the ground and your heart exposed and your mind undividable. There is no such thing as division. There is definitely difference. There is definitely uniqueness. There is definitely everybody's ideas. But in the cosmic scheme of life, it is all one event that's occurring here and now. There is not a possibility of separation. And it seems to me that this is where human beings go really painfully wrong. Is consistently attempting to divide the hearts of people. This is not going to last, and this will not. It will not. Not for the yogi. And you, how long have you been on this path in this lifetime?
Most of it.
Long time. And it has to settle in at some point that you see that division or division, yes. Separation, no. Everybody's breathing the same air. Everybody's heart is beating at the same, in the same way. Everybody has red blood. Everybody has to eat, and everybody has to eliminate, and everybody sleeps, and everybody, and children are born out of women's wombs thus far, and all of this, and we still don't see it. The yogi has to see it. And they have to stay there. And they have to, because they are, I would say, at least I would say, excuse me for being so adamant. And in a way, you're right, because, you know, the Upanishad says that the way to enlightenment is narrow and as difficult to walk as a razor's edge. And yet, the real, well, what we can say truth, it's a shifty word, but we're going to use it because it's accurate. It's like the arrow flying into the bullseye. It's like the arrow piercing the bullseye. It's like flying on through the bullseye. There is no such thing as separation. And when you stay there, when you're committed to seeing with, as Jesus said, when your eye is single, your body will fill with light. Doesn't mean that your body's going to sparkle or you're going to fill with light. What it really means is you cannot see double anymore. And this is absolutely necessary to change the world. If you have to stay with the totality. You stay with the one God that resides in everyone, whether no matter who it is, no matter what they're doing. And don't say God is good. God is whatever God is. Uh-huh. If I were you or anyone, I would really get a very profound and sweet, simple relationship with the divine that lives in my heart and never, never guides me incorrectly. And if I die in that, well, I'm going to die sometime. If I lose friends in that, well, I don't have any friends anyhow. So I have lovers. And divine love. This is my relationship with everyone I know. It is by divine means undividable love. I can't suggest what you should do. Except for what I've just said.
Yeah.
But let me say one more thing and I'm done. You have to proceed in your own way, which I will always support, whether it goes through the first time or there's some trips and falls, or you stand in the glory of your nobility as a human being, I'm going to support you no matter what. Because you're wise, and you're clear, and you're heartful. And whether there's political division or not, or war division or not, let no one divide your heart. And that'll be up to you. That's not up to anyone else.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it means to you, Santosh. I only know that the direction is accurate. Mm-hmm. And I love prayer. I say, let us pray for everyone. Everyone. That's my soft spot. Go ahead. What were you going to say? What were you going to say? And we'll close.
Just to agree with everything you were saying. And I know that image of looking from a plane and looking down and seeing life that. Even driving in a car and driving past village, you know, like Nikki and I just, Sumitra and I just did, coming to Tirutha Satya.
Yes.
people's whole lives are spent, and they're lived fully in seeming separation from even my awareness. But when I drive past, there's a grace in that, you know. There's a grace. There's a grace in the broadness of human consciousness that's being expressed in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
And within each is a heart that beats, whether they're in touch with it or not, or whether their mind is set in other directions. But
for sure. And it doesn't matter whether they know it or don't know it. What's important is that you be aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And remember that this is Maya. And the Hindus don't call it, or the Indians or whatever, they don't call it Maya for nothing. Remember, this too will pass. Everything will pass. Everything is passing. Everything is moving. Everything is changing. What does not change ever? You will find yourself nature. Arjuna, there was no time when these warriors were not, and there will never be a time when they are not. Arjuna, fight. Because you're a fighter. And I say love because you're a lover. And I say change the world from within yourself, because you're this is what you're seeking within yourself. You're not seeking it outside of yourself. There's no such thing as separation. Zero. Uniqueness, yes. Difference, yes. Separation is impossible. It's not possible. The interdependence of all things shows that that's true. Everything depends on everything to be, and it's all passing. And everybody's working it out in their own way. And some people will learn and move into the chambers of their hearts so perfectly that they'll never leave again. And some people will do other things. We just don't know. What will you do? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to tell everybody that I am having a heck of a time with the Bhagavad Gita intensive, because it is so perfect as it is that to comment on it is almost. But I'm giving it a go and we'll see what can happen. And I will dive in, but it's so perfect as it is. We'll do it. Don't let anybody make you heavy. Don't let anybody make you angry. Whoever makes you angry controls you. And love everyone. And you don't have to be emotionally involved with anyone to love them. You just simply don't hate them. Because everybody is in their perfect place doing exactly what they do. Why is that so? Because that's the way it is. Yogi always looks at things as they are, not as they wish they were or as they should be. The whole world can blow up. The sun can come and lick the earth and done. I mean, it's really important that people who have gone this journey and those who are coming on to this heart they have, be there. And unemotionally, don't get so wrapped up in emotions or all of that. Keep your emotions calm and steady like a mirrored lake. And when you cry, and when you don't, but you're not going to fall over into disarray because of an emotional state. This is really important. God bless the world, everything in it. Who knows what this Israeli thing means? Who knows what any of it is? What I really know, if I know anything at all, and I probably don't, is that I must live for the whole of the world exactly as I would like to see it, in a state of love for all beings, unemotionally attached to that which I love. Openly and freely and kindly and generously. And I love God's creation. I don't know how not to. My guru taught me that that was very important. And his grace pulled it off. And you can be really irritated with people, and you can be really pained, and you can be really, but it doesn't last long. You're not going to give yourself to it, except for maybe at the moment, because you have to give your emotions a place to exhaust. But it's not going to define you, and you're not going to remain there. You're going to remain in a loving heart for every being. And I don't know what that means to anyone. I have no idea what that means, except for this Maya, which is created by divine dreaming. Whatever I am, I don't know. But I'm here to be at peace with everything. And for everyone. And it goes up and down, and it goes sideways and inside out, and always remains and lands in the same peaceful atmosphere of the heart. And that's just the way it is. And I think it's very good for the planet to have people in that, I don't know what to call it, space. I don't like all these words. So, I just love when you went like this. It reminded me of a vast field and the Upanishadic statement about the razor's edge, and the yogi grieves for no one because life goes on, right? And not only does life go on, we just return and return like the seasons. And then there's the Aboriginals who weep and weep and weep. And how beautiful is the difference? And what is the spectrum in between? So that's why I don't tell people what to do. I feel that they know what to do. Maybe I can encourage them. I pray that I can.
Thank you, Shanti Mai.
You're welcome. Namaste.
Namaste.
Interesting conversations. The world's people are passing, and the igniting of the anger in the world is at a high pitch. We'll see where it goes. I love you. I live for you. I live for God's grace. I don't know what it means. I really don't know what it means. It's a moment to moment. It's not even a commitment. It's just, I don't know any other way. And I pray that others don't know any other way either. And my view is that this is what heals. Don't like that word. This is what brings the world into the light of the heart. And it looks like it wouldn't. And it looks like it shouldn't be like that. And that's true, but it is like that. And for those who are here to shift the consciousness, it has to be shifted. And you can never fail. You can make some mistakes. Okay, make mistakes. So don't conceptualize what that means. Just live in your heart, whatever that means to you. Don't conceptualize what you have to be like that. You already are like that. At the core of your being, you are. Shakti, you want to chant a closing chant for us? And thank listen.
You. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Beautiful. We'll do the same chant that we began with, the JJJ Gananayaka. We'll give it another shot. Hopefully you can hear me this time. JJJ Gananayaka. JJ Vijnanasaka. Nasaka Gachavadana Gore Nandana Gachavadana Gore Nandana Gachavadana. Jesus. J.
Thank you.
Namaste, and thank you, everybody. We will see you next week on Sunday, or very early in the morning on Monday, depending on where you are. Please check your email and check it again right before satsang to see if there are any corrections to timing and such. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, we'll see you next week. Namaste.